as always, by my partner in crime and all things not criminal.
I'm Aislinn Gamble. And we like to talk about whatever the piss Aislinn and Joe want to talk about.
Last week's episode, and if you haven't listened, I suggest you do, was a day-by-day detailed accounting of the Texas freeze apocalypse and how we handled it. Our power went out. Our water was busted. It's been a full week, Aislinn.
Mm-hmm.
How is everything?
I was all of a sudden hastily starting to try to push information out about everybody chill out, everybody chill out, don't do anything, because people were cutting, people were watering.
And it was such a beautiful day, that first couple days of the weekend, right after the freeze. People wanted to be outside, and they took a look at some really sad gardens and
plants. Exactly. You look at that, and you go, oh my God, it's dead, it's dry, I need to water it, I need to trim it, I need to clean, I need to... You've got to have some patience. You've got to wait it out. You've got to see what has survived, what has made it, you know, what has not. We've got like sprigs of grass coming back up.
Yeah.
We have a really, really nice lawn of St. Augustine grass. Mm-hmm. It's well established. So I didn't expect anything less. St. Augustine's going to eventually take back over again. And then the rest of everything, I mean, like I was out there a minute ago. I'm watering. I'm seeing what's alive in the pots that has made it. I'm already going ahead and replanting annuals. I'm starting to plant seeds. I'm leaving my perennials and my trees alone just to kind of see what buds and what doesn't. I noticed today while I was watering that one cabbage that we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, mm-hmm. it flopped over.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure I need to cut it off. I cut its head off. Otherwise, I mean, and there may be a little bit of good cabbage meat inside of it, but it's done.
Mm-hmm.
It's time. But that's the thing is the annuals, it was almost expected. And you can already see like cilantro, lettuce, dill, all these things popping back up again. And then the other thing that you'll notice, and this is the good thing about seeds, seeds will die at a high heat temperature, but in a freeze, they actually just go dormant.
Yeah.
And so actually when the temperature of the soil gets back up and they're watered and they've got the temperature that they need, we're going to see a lot of seeds of things, especially when you garden in a way that you let things seed so that there are always seeds in the soil. You know, so, of course, you're going to see the weeds also.
Yeah, funny how they live. The question is, what food can we expect 90, 100 days from now?
One of the things that I teach is about planting abundance. Just keep planting. Just keep planting.
Yeah.
Because I had planted so many plants that hadn't even been put in the ground yet, I can replace everything today. Like mm-hmm. today, I'm going through the rows and just putting in another broccoli, another cauliflower. And normally, I wouldn't do that this time of year. Because I've already had plenty. Mm-hmm. I already had it all planted and I've already eaten more than I needed and shared plenty and everybody's kind of tired of it. And now it's time to transition to the other harvest and the other harvest is coming on. So what's going to happen is we're going to have a period of time where we're going to have a little bit of everything, literally everything, which doesn't happen that often for us. So that's kind of nice, but it'll be very short because it's going to be 81 on Sunday. 81, y'all.
It's February.
Welcome to Texas. Thank God I live in Texas.
Actually, it'll be March by the time you hear this. The grocery stores are full. Savannah and I went to the grocery store last night, and everything is back. Some of the items that were stalled, milk, bread, eggs.
I expect nothing less. They're very good. And one of the things I want to say in terms of gratitude is I'm really grateful for the truck drivers. Because when it comes down to it, they're like the postman, you know, like no sleet or hail. They're trying to get things to you as fast as they can. And when we live in a world where we like to have our one-punch convenience, and what that means is that we're going to have the types of direct-to-consumer open-air markets like the farmer's market and other pop-up markets and things like that. But most of the rest of your shopping is going to be a one-punch order off of something online that shows up at your door. And that means that the truck drivers are very valuable resources to our state of distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say thank you to the folks that are doing that work.
But, I mean, I'm not going to forget for a long time that we as a city, and I guess across the state, talking to some friends of mine that live elsewhere, we were food insecure there for a while.
Yep. One of the things that I have noticed after a week, I was standing out in the front with our neighbor,
mm-hmm.
and she's saying thank you for the water that we extended to them because they took our water hose.
Our water was working. Theirs was not.
You had actually mentioned that some other friends, mm-hmm. neighbors, whatever, had talked about different things that they were trying to figure out and learn how to do in the midst of something that they might have never imagined they'd have to deal with. And that's basically what the neighbor was saying was there are certain things that I didn't know how to handle. Like I didn't know where to turn the water off.
We all had broken pipes.
Right.
And when you discovered that our pipe was broken,
mm-hmm.
it's not a hard thing. You go over to the backyard spigot. I can turn that lower faucet and turn off all the water to the house. So I'm not wasting water, losing water, paying for water that's just leaking out of a pipe.
Truth. But imagine being the person in any situation that is 32 degrees outside. Mm-hmm. It's freezing ass cold. Your brain's practically frozen and you can't think straight. You're trying to solve a problem. You're feeling anxious. And there's three different things to twist and turn. And the neighbors turned the gas off accidentally.
Right. The gas main is right next to the water main into your home. They did the wrong one.
Yeah. And you had spoken to your buddy and it's kind of similar. Yeah.
First home he's ever lived in. He's always lived in apartments. He just didn't know what to do.
Right. And so what that got us talking about was just kind of that concept of when and how are the current young adults learning to do the simple things that are required to just exist, you know? And you might still be able to ask for help. Like the idea that I'm a 42-year-old woman that can't change a tire means that I've always had someone that could change a tire for me.
You are that person.
Right. Mm. Right. So
it reminds me of that scene in the movie we watched recently, and you should watch it if you haven't. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's on Hulu now. Nomadland.
Mm-hmm. I loved that movie. Everyone should watch it. It's so
a lady
good.
Who loses her job and then her husband, but with limited means, buys a van and becomes a nomad. And you meet characters along the way.
And it's such a deep film that that's not enough, but go see it. Yeah. I mean, like, it's there's so much intricacy to what they, to the stories they tell in that show. Right.
But as a newbie to the nomad lifestyle, she learns about and attends a kind of annual conference of nomads where they just teach each other stuff, including how to change a
kind
tire.
Of the home economics concept that we might have used to blow off class.
Well, the home economics class, I remember it existing. I never took it. It was, and no offense to home ec teachers out there, if there are, is even a class that still exists, it was a blow-off
they
class.
They call them different things now. They call them food science. Okay. Cortland and Hunter both took food science.
In high school.
Yeah, and I don't know what they call technically home ec, but that's what the food economics class is called now.
Yeah.
Jokingly, people have maybe heard the term basket weaving, the basket weaving class, you know, and I'm going to take basket weaving during the semester I've got quantum physics in or whatever, you know, organic chemistry, you know, one of those that's always a difficult class to take. And, you know, that's what Grow Local really was about for me, probably above anything else, was food access, about learning how to do it yourself if there isn't someone there to do it for you. And not to say that we, again, aren't going to support one another as a community. And if someone calls you or sends you a message and asks you, how do I do such and such, you're going to tell them or show them or teach them or whatever. But that there are certain things that we just kind of need to know as we go out into the world. That's part of the reason why there's a big contingency of homeschooling that doesn't have to do with some of the like religious values. Because a lot of times homeschooling has to do with religious values.
There's a Venn diagram overlap there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But there's also those of us, and my kids didn't end up being homeschooled because my ex-husband worked at the school, but there are those that the concept of homeschooling had to do with exactly this. There are certain things that kids need to learn how to do that we're not teaching them how to do at the school. And then you ask, well, whose responsibility is it? And I say, well, when your kids go to school from 8 to 5, 300 days out of the year, and they're required to do that, whose responsibility is it? Like, I don't have my kids anymore. You have my kids. And you, by law, require me to have my kids in school. So if that's the case, then you need to make sure my kids know what they need to know when something catastrophic happens in their community. And they can take care of themselves.
I remember the school that I went to had a money class we took. This is elementary school, where we learned how to write a check.
Yeah.
That's kind of a lost art anyway, because checks aren't as used today as they were then. But fixing a flat tire,
right?
Changing the oil in your car,
and
checking the oil in your
car. I'm not just talking about handing you a worksheet that says, fill out this questionnaire of how you plant a plant. No, I'm saying go plant a plant so that you can feel it and touch it and see it. Because there are kids out there that can't sit in a classroom and listen and hear and whatever. You know, we don't have to get all into this.
Your dad's birthday is this Sunday and we're having a crawfish boil out of the farm.
My favorite.
If I polled your family,
mm-hmm.
the favorite food by a wide margin is crawfish.
Mm-hmm.
So your dad and your brother, prior to now, had purchased a commercial-grade crawfish boiler.
Mm-hmm.
And the question was asked to me, Joe, would you mind running the crawfish boil? Because, you know,
so that he doesn't your dad to be normally would do it. Charge. Yeah.
And we want him to be able to chill and relax and enjoy his party and some friends that are coming over.
Yeah. By the way, he built a place to purge the crawfish.
I saw
he
that.
He has a whole new contraption to
I
be used.
I saw that. Perfect. Thank you for saying that because mm-hmm. it lends itself to mm-hmm. my point. I said, yes, I'd love to. I've never done that before, and I'm capable of doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
But sure would be nice to be
Have
taught how to do it prior.
Mm-hmm. Can I get a little hands-on learning, please, first?
So we had a smaller crawfish boil, just a small, you know, just our family. Mm-hmm. And he ran me through it, taught me how. I'm very comfortable going into the crawfish boil this Sunday. Now, learning how to do new things and the responsibility to learn so that when you're in a crisis, you can do the basic things.
Or you want to put
something
on
that's
a
come up again
father-in-law's
and again.
Birthday party and help him out. Yes.
Hey, father-in-law figures, sometimes you feel like you could be in a crisis in that situation. That's a joke. Best guy ever.
Unanswered questions.
I was thinking all week long about potatoes. Listen, there's some weeks that I actually don't even listen to the podcast episode. Like, I know that's weird, but some weeks I just don't for whatever reason. This time, I listened to it 3 times.
I did too.
I wanted to hear it. It
I
made
thought it was,
me
it was a really
laugh.
Good one. It was a really good one.
But it got me thinking about potatoes a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Because you had talked about the potatoes going through the slicer machine.
Yeah.
And I was curious whether you ran across that. You should have sent me a video.
I did some research about the McDonald's french fries or fast food french fries, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And how they're made and how the most intriguing part was that they slice the... At my house, I use a mandolin to cut the french fries.
Uh-huh.
At the restaurant supply store, I could buy a press with a waffle-looking thing that I put the potato in, and the perfect fries come out. But at McDonald's, when they're making billions and billions and billions of french fries a day or a month or whatever, we learned that they shoot the potatoes through pipes at 75 miles an hour through the cutting surface.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see a video of that.
I know, yeah.
A video exists, but the system is contained. There's no open spaces to see an explosion of french fries like a t-shirt gun or a confetti blower. That's what I was looking for.
No old school, like, showing you how they're making chicken nuggets and they just throw the whole chicken in the grinder and it just grinds up the whole chicken and everything with it and then shoots out these goo that becomes chicken nuggets in a press of some kind.
I imagine that someone determined that 75 mile an hour potatoes flying around is best inside of a contained system where humans can't
God, we're so weak. We need so many damn safety features. Speaking of safety features, mm-hmm. did you figure out how many days refrigeration can be off or how much time refrigeration can be off before our grocery store has to clear the refrigerated section?
After an hour of Googling the topic.
Uh-huh.
Because our power went out at our grocery stores before those generators kicked in. And by the time we all got back into the grocery stores after the freeze had allowed us to navigate the roads, they had taken out all of the frozen, all of the meat, all of the dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the power had been off for a period of time. And I did not know what that period of time was. I only learned that, yes, that is exactly the protocol.
Right.
But there was no documentation of how long, what the critical time is. If they've been off for 10, 15, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever it is, I don't know the answer to that question. All that I know is that I walked through that grocery store ghost town and it was eerie.
I would really like to know the answer to that question because it kind of bothers me. You know, this is one of those things when it comes to food security and food waste that bothers me about our system. This is actually one of the questions before I resigned from my position on the health board that is non-existent because there was a health crisis. And so what would you need a health board for in a crisis health situation?
That makes sense.
But anyways, one of the questions I asked that I wanted information on was kind of this subject. I need to understand what the waste protocol is for transitioning food to homeless shelters, you know, because the safety valve is set pretty obnoxiously high. So I'd like to know.
A threshold that we wouldn't follow in our own home?
Oh, God, no.
No, I believe you. I think
as a matter of fact, it was surprising to me how many people were concerned about the food in the refrigerators after a shutdown of electricity when it was 32 degrees inside their house. Take your food
out of
the
refrigerator. How low did it get down inside our house? 45?
42.
Right. I did find, though, those 19 ingredients that make up a McDonald's french fry. You know how I found it? McDonald's did a campaign called What's in Our Food or something like that. And mm-hmm. it was widely distributed. And the reaction to it was either, who cares, didn't see it, or How many ingredients? I've made French fries at home before. There are only three.
Right.
Potatoes, salt, and oil. That's it. Three, right?
Anytime you preserve food, period, blank, stop, you're going to have to add things to it in order for it to be preserved itself, shelf stable. It doesn't matter whether you're a farmer that's growing it and preserving it and putting it on your shelf in your own home, or whether you're some sort of a grocery store, fast food chain, whatever. However, how much preservatives and extra ingredients do you really want in everything you eat?
Yeah, and it's not like I care what you eat. I don't. Right. Eat whatever the hell you want to eat. We're just telling you what we do. And if you want to eat McDonald's french fries, I love them. I mean, and here's the thing. If I intersect with one of our kids and there's a bag of fast food, I might grab a french fry. They taste so good. Here's what's in McDonald's french fries aside from the things that we mentioned. We know there's going to be salt and potatoes and oil, right? And I realize that the things that they're adding are for purposes that I completely understand from a consumer point of view. A lot
of their goal is for you to be able to buy the most beautiful, delicious...
uniform.
Right.
French fries in America. Dextrose, for example. It's a natural form of sugar. And what does it do? It helps give the fries that golden color.
Mm-hmm.
Sodium acid pyruvate is added to keep the potatoes from turning gray after they freeze them, you know, when mm-hmm. they're shipping
yep.
them out,
yep.
and before they're cooked at the restaurant. They want the color to be right.
So what they did with these particular ingredients is take the old grandma ways and create synthetic versions. So lime juice is known citrus.
Mm-hmm.
Acid mm-hmm. is known to help things maintain their...
Right. If you cut up an apple, mm-hmm. it starts to turn brown immediately. How do you solve that? Put a little lemon juice, lime juice, citrus on it.
Mm-hmm.
Citric acid.
There you go.
It's added to preserve the freshness of the oil.
Okay.
Okay. Is it worth me mispronouncing these? Is that funny? Dimethylolipolysixylinate is also added. Now, this is an interesting one.
Dimethylolipoly?
To reduce foaming and oil splattering. Okay.
That's fast
employees
food.
Around the country. Mm-hmm.
This is a fast food
dunking
industry.
Dunking french fries all over the world. Mm-hmm. We don't want the oil to, you know, be... Because I've cooked bacon and oh, mm-hmm. ow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've never bought one of those big bacon grease splash resistor that you put over your thing.
I wonder if they implemented that ingredient after somebody sued them for drinking hot coffee.
Right.
This is when the safety valve
no,
started
drink
like
hot
going
coffee,
off.
The coffee spilled in their lap.
There you go.
TBHQ is an antioxidant that acts as a preservative, allowing the oil to remain fresh from the supplier all the way to the restaurant. So a preservative for the oil. That's one of the ingredients. Four of the ingredients are oils, a blend of different oils. Canola oil, corn oil, soybean oil, hydrogenated soybean oil. And this is an interesting one. Natural beef flavor made from wheat and milk derivatives, hydrolyzed wheat and hydrolyzed milk.
Oh my God, I wonder how many vegans eat french fries.
That was the lead sentence of the article.
Uh-huh.
Vegans, make sure that you understand what exactly is going on.
Because there's so many teenage vegans yeah. that don't have a clue.
A lot of teenage vegans have got, and we know this personally, from a teenage vegan in the house. Horrible.
She would never call herself a vegan.
I know. She'll eat meat when it's from our home and she knows where
well,
it came
even
from.
Even still, like she eats fish and eggs. She's just a teenager with a mother who's obsessed about food, and that's probably created some issues.
Merry Christmas, an extra 100 for a couple of therapy appointments. Save it. You'll need it later. I promise.
I told her yesterday, I was like, please go eat. You're getting so thin, my sweetheart. And she's like, okay. So I took her one of these beautiful smoothies we're going to talk about in a little bit.
You want to talk about smoothies or do you want to talk about caldo?
That caldo was amazing.
Were you raised on caldo?
A little bit. I mean, yeah. I mean, I lived in South Texas all my life. So
I lived in South Texas all my life. Was not raised on caldo. Had my first bowl of caldo as an adult.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, yeah, totally. Friends, parents that made caldo, we'd eat caldo at the restaurants, usually beef caldo. Yeah, I mean, we were South Texas to the core. Like, we really were.
Yeah.
We ate all the good stuff.
Okay, so when we had the bright idea to make caldo, before you consider what we put in our caldo, what were you expecting to find in it? It was going to be chicken, by the way, not beef.
I was expecting to have the meat with bone in it. I was expecting it to have a clear broth with a little bit of citrusy flavor. I was expecting it to have corn and cabbage and potatoes in it.
So when you've had caldo throughout your life, those are kind of the commonalities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And carrots. Usually there's carrots in it too.
Well, check, 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 and check. all of those ingredients were in our caldo, I went to the grocery store to buy corn.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, they had fresh corn.
I didn't realize that you had gotten...
Oh, yeah. I shucked it and sliced it, baby.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, how nice. You made such a beautiful plate. It was so gorgeous. I can't wait for you to show off the photo.
I thawed the chicken from the freezer, whole chicken, in the Instant Pot. Just thawed it so that I could then butcher it and then cook it traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
And that is oil first, and then lay your pieces on the bottom of the Dutch oven that you're going to make your caldo in, and you brown it on both sides. Mm-hmm. Took two batches because that was a big-ass chicken.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Local farmers growing local chicken. Let me ask you a question. How much you paid for that chicken?
I'm never good at that.
18, 19, 20?
15 to 18.
That's good.
Yeah.
A big fat chicken. Mm-hmm. Make a couple meals out of it.
Yes, a couple of meals because we ate the leftovers out of this caldo.
It's still, there's still plenty more. I can eat more today.
But, then you're adding your onion, your serrano peppers, and the garlic. I didn't have to buy onion at the grocery store because I had some scallions mm-hmm. that we had bought at the farmer's market. The garlic from the grocery store, of course. You cook all that. Then you add your carrots.
I agree that.
Celery. Grocery
Not
store.
Yet, but there will be some of that soon.
Potatoes, but we used turnips.
There was no potatoes in
it? No, there was half
of
it. Oh,
half. Okay. Because I can kind of tell the difference when I bite into one, if it's a potato or a turnip.
So now you're building a soup. I love building a soup. I love bringing to you every 10 minutes a taste of the soup, and we have our little powwow of add some more of this, add some more of that.
Soup is definitely in one of my top favorite things to eat, is good soup.
Then you're adding cilantro. You grew it. Cabbage, you grew it. Tomatoes, you grew it. Lime juice, your chicken, and then your chicken broth. We didn't grow it, but we made it. bay leaves, you grew it. And then when that comes to a boil, you're doing our 10-minute taste test until all the vegetables are exactly where we want them to be. Then you drop in those little corn. I cut them into about 3-inch wide mm-hmm. pieces, your corn cob. 15 more minutes and you're ready to eat.
And then you brought me out this beautiful bowl that you had made.
Well, the garnishes suggested in the recipe, but I've seen this as well, is sliced raw radishes on top. You grew those.
Mine aren't just the basic radishes, y'all. My radishes are special. They're beautiful. They look like a purple kaleidoscope.
Gorgeous. Avocado, grocery store, and then some cilantro sprigs that I hadn't put into the actual dish.
I think my cilantro is going to make it, a lot of it.
Oh, wonderful.
As a matter of fact, I noticed that
it's
one of
salsa
my...
salsa time.
I know. One of my friends that grows even further south Texas, like deep valley south Texas, he actually now works on a very large organic vegetable farm down there. And he said what they're doing, because they dealt with the same types of freezes down there as well. He said what they're doing is basically mowing it, trimming up the sides, and letting it regrow.
I love mowing over a patch of
dill
wild,
or cilantro.
Wild cilantro, like yeah. in the middle of the yard. Oh, honey, make some salsa. We will definitely post the caldo recipe that I found online and used this first time because I find no need to alter this recipe at all. However, if you read the recipe and you're a caldo aficionado and we need to do a tweak here or there, please let us know.
Yes.
I'm going to suggest that you do this one. And I don't like to brag on myself. I'll let you do that for me. And I'll let you also honestly tell me that it's not very good. But this was excellent.
It was excellent. After the week of what all of my farmer friends went through and just being cooped up and everything, I decided I want to go downtown yeah. and do that on a Wednesday night when we have our farmer's market down here.
Yeah.
We accidentally met up with some friends at a local little place that we like to go to and have a drink and have some nachos. We got into a conversation that I thought was really interesting. Of course, they both have like 8-to-5 jobs or yeah. 8-to-7 jobs or 9-to-7 or whatever people are doing these days. Because I don't do that. So we got into a conversation talking about meal planning. Because we like to talk about food with these folks. I mean,
yeah.
like one of the first conversations we started was talking about rabbit.
Yeah, he hit me up and said, hey, you want some black market rabbit? It's going to be dressed, meaning that the innards are removed. It's mm-hmm. ready to cook, in other words. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be sealed in like a vacuum seal bag.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, how much does a rabbit cost? $8. Like, hell yeah, let me try yeah. some rabbit.
Yeah.
And the same thing with this crawfish thing. Hell yeah, I'd love to cook some crawfish. Teach me how to do it the first time. So I said, I've never cooked rabbit before. This was many years ago. Mm-hmm. And he said, here's the way I do it. Da-da-da-da-da. And I made some rabbit stew and some chicken fried rabbit. Mm-hmm. And I love rabbit. It's delicious.
So this got us talking with our friends that like to cook.
They've given us mustard. Yeah. They've given, I mean, they ferment, they preserve, and we trade food.
Yeah, exactly. start talking about meal planning and how do you do it and how do they do it. When you're talking about households that have, you know, in our household, we're nonstop, both of us, working all kinds of weird hours. And the kids are in and out. And then you got, like, other families.
My current schedule is take my daughter dinner, go back home, then go pick her up at 9 p.m. after play practice.
Right, exactly.
That's cooking time.
Right.
And it can screw us up if we don't plan ahead just a little bit.
Their plan was interesting. They basically said each night of the week, they kind of knew what the basic was. So like Taco Tuesday, you can do any kind of taco you want, but it's Taco Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
Yeah.
We're eating tacos.
Yeah. And then like, oh, we're going to have beef on Wednesdays, whatever.
On Wednesday, you know, we're doing beef.
Yeah. And we're going to have homemade pizzas. We're always going to have homemade pizzas.
We're having pizza.
Right. And so then you kind of do whatever you want with it. So it's like, well, if we're making chicken, I could make chicken curry if I wanted to.
He also makes his own dough and freezes it till Friday. You know, like they're doing as much as they can inside the kitchen. He enjoys cooking. I love them and I'm glad that works for them. But that sounds so...
Well, ours is different because we
restrictive.
Are, well, we're producers, so we have to use what we have available.
And I got to at least churn out one interesting recipe a week for the show.
Oh, right. Exactly. That's for sure. One of the things that when you and I moved in together and then you kind of started to take over the cooking, and I always think that the main
reason...
No
more beans. Get out of the way, woman.
Well, I think that the main reason that started happening had to do with your kids, because it was just more well-received, and I didn't get so grumpy when your kids wouldn't eat the food that I would cook. If you made the food, they would kind of eat it, but it wouldn't upset me if they didn't, because it wasn't my food, you know? And so it just kind of shifted that direction, and when that happened, it became a situation where I basically taught you and we as a household began to do what is the staples. So it's not necessarily that we meal plan, but we have a plan in place to do anything we want to. So one of the things I thought was interesting that we had talked about was, what is your pantry staples? What are your fridge staples? And what are your freezer staples? And I was actually in there stuffing all of my Trader Joe's snacks in there because those have become a staple in the household.
Your trips to San Antonio usually yield a few bags of Trader Joe's groceries. We don't have a Trader Joe's down here.
Yeah. And so as I was doing that, I was like, it's interesting to think, even after this last week and talking about food security and talking about, you know, families that don't have the ability to freeze meat or save meat or they can't pre-purchase. And I want to think about what even could families be able to kind of store things away so that they have things available when something happens that gets weird. So like rice is an important one. Beans are an important one.
It is so funny how we get stuck into our own head that the way we do things is the way everyone probably does things.
Yeah,
we've got maybe a freezer full of meat.
You have to remind me all the time that people don't always understand me because they don't do things the way I do.
So we're going to have meat. So I asked a couple of people, like, doesn't everyone just have a pound of ground beef in their freezer at all times, even if they aren't even planning for anything, but just something they stuck up there because they didn't end up using it?
Well, I think in some situations...
The answer, it turns out, is no.
Well, right. But I think in a lot of situations, folks that have been trained to shift towards eating more fresh foods, we've stopped doing the weekly grocery store trip, where we just fill our basket up with $300 worth of groceries, and that's the one trip of the week that you make. And so our freezers and our pantries are full of all of the hamburger helper boxes and the ground beef and all the things we need to make the meals. There's been so much of a shift away from that even. And number one, we're going to eat out, or we're going to go by the store and pick up what we need and eat it fresh.
Yeah.
Okay? And we do that. We eat fresh food every single day. And you go to the grocery store almost every single day.
Every other day, yeah.
But in the refrigerator, there are always some onions, some carrots, some celery. We always have garlic. In the pantry, we always have rice, beans, some chips. We always have some tortillas in the freezer.
Serious for the girl. I can find tortillas in the freezer at any moment. I can find chicken broth that we make in the freezer at any moment. When I see that the inventory is getting to the trigger point, we make chicken on purpose so that we can make more broth. I want to have those things around to have the freedom to be able to do it our own way with our own food as often as possible. I find myself going to the grocery store for cooking onions, for lack of a better word, the big bulb onions.
Because we go through onions so fast.
I cook onions every single day. onions are in everything.
Yeah.
Weird in ice cream, but we make it work. Stupid.
That caught me late, too. I know. It's like, what did he just say?
She's not listening, or that wasn't funny. Probably a little bit of both. The spice cabinet, you run ride my ass if I go buy a new oregano when I run out of oregano, but I want to have it available.
Staples, yeah.
Because the spices are critical.
We are staying fresh and we are updating things regularly and we are using what's available that's coming out of the garden or out of the farmer's market, but we always have staples.
Yeah.
No matter what, we always have staples. I think that that's a part of something that maybe folks could shift more towards, a little bit more towards. And I'm not talking, like, I even look at our pantry, like I said, I was looking at it today. We don't have what other people have in their pantry, I don't think.
Kids certainly say we don't when they're looking for a junk food quick snack.
Yeah, I mean, we have a couple boxes of cereal because you and the girls are all addicted to cereal and it's terrible for you, but whatever. And we have lots of chocolate and we have peanut butter. We have a few canned things, but we just don't have fruit roll-ups and boxes of Pop-Tarts. Mm. And I know that everyone that's listening to the show is like, duh, we already know that. But we shifted towards keeping the staples in our household that meant at any moment in time, you can make whatever we need to make. Even if, like you said last week when you were talking about not being able to get access to potatoes to put in with our potato that turned into just turnip mash. Because you were like, I'm just going to run to the store and see if there's some potatoes. Because our normal lifestyle is pretty much everything on the plate is ours. But we're going to add in some garlic, fresh garlic, or a couple of potatoes or whatever. And we don't have that right now. Mm-hmm. So we can go to the store and buy it.
You planted potatoes, right?
I did. Okay. I just did.
All right, good.
So I think that it's just shifting again, like shifting your mindset again. Like, yes, the idea is to keep most of what you're buying on a kind of a daily basis in a fresh manner. Especially if you live in the city and you're within walking distance of a grocery store. Now, when we move out to the farm, that's going to be different. But folks that live in a city where they're in, you know, convenience areas, there's certain things that you just need to keep staple. And you know what? That's when it comes to hurricane preparedness and fire summer preparedness and all the different preparedness that everyone tries to get everyone to be prepared for. This is it. Get your staples. Make sure you have bottles of water.
Well, I know.
Make sure
Texas,
you have batteries. Da-da-da-da-da.
In Texas, we got a lesson. Now, I've shifted to Google Keep as my note-taking. I've got a master grocery list. You are shared on it. The kids are shared on it. If someone needs cereal or a toothpaste or whatever it is, they can go in and just add it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go to the store, I look at it, and whatever's on that list, I will buy.
Yeah, even tampons. He lives with three women.
Yeah, I got over that a long time ago.
You did.
I go buy what is required for our home.
Mm-hmm.
There have been many, many picture trading text messages about like the sizes and the absorbencies and the color of the packaging. But there are four items that never leave the list.
Mm-hmm.
I have added a fifth.
Is it chocolate?
What's the exact question?
Is the fifth new item chocolate?
You are correct. I have added it to the list. It is in all caps, which means do not delete this from the list.
Uh-huh.
Water, because of the way we buy water.
Yeah.
Which, when we move to the farm, I'm hoping is changing. Beer.
Yeah.
Wine.
Yeah.
Toilet paper.
Yeah.
Chocolate.
Yeah.
So when you talk about staples in our house.
Name that list again.
Beer, wine, water, toilet paper, chocolate.
I said.
And toilet paper went on the list during COVID. Yeah. Because you could get like I could get a 4-pack today.
Yeah.
And it's that.
Every day
Mexican
that I'm at the grocery
made
store.
Off-brand, you know, papel that I could use as, I could sand down the chicken coop with it if I needed to. But now, of course, we're back to our grocery store brand, the red package, not the blue package.
I was going to say that on my gratitude list during the Snowvid event was thank God for wine and fudge.
As long as everyone's happy. You know how you take your car in for a tune-up?
Mm-hmm.
We got to tune up ourselves as humans from time to time. And one of the things I was doing was procrastinating getting out of bed and probably staying up too late the night before. And you have been my inspiration because you get up bright and early, usually up and out of bed, and you got yourself a little routine. One portion of that routine is that you've gotten into this smoothie making
thing. I have. I've reinstated an old habit of making myself smoothies. And it started back again with the whole tooth thing when I was doing the having to deal with all that. And I was having to drink, you know, eat nothing but smushy stuff. And a smoothie is a good option during that time. A smoothie, like a smoothie bowl. And then the other thing that I have learned and had already thought that I would start doing before that even happened was that it's better for me to break fast a little earlier in the day, at least by noon. Part of that is also because I like to take a lot of supplements, and I think those supplements are really beneficial to me. I think with this thyroid thing, you guys know I have dealt with, that they are beneficial to that, and I want to make sure that I'm good about taking them. And so I have gotten myself into a pretty much a daily routine that's working out really well. And what I do is I actually make a starter smoothie, and then I use that smoothie to make smoothies for 2 or 3 days.
Like once sourdough bread.
Kind of, except that there's no like growing culture in it, right. I hope.
After the 3 days that smoothie is over, you start over.
Yeah. And basically what happens is I take the smoothie starter, which is like all my stuff blended up, and then I add ice to it, which makes it cold and frothy again.
Right.
Frosty again, whatever you want to call it.
Milkshake.
And so if you've got the starter, every day you pour the whole starter into the blender. And you then add some ice to it. You zip it up. You pour how much you want in your bowl or glass or whatever you're using. And then you pour the rest of it into a big, nice mason jar. Seal it up. Put it back in the refrigerator. Then the next day, I pull it back out again. I add a few other things into it, fresh things into it. I add some ice into it. Zip it again. Pour half of it into whatever thing I want. Pour whatever's left into the jar. And eventually it gets to the point where you've started to begin to dilute the original.
Yeah.
Because it's got ice, right? So you want to use the last. Ice, baby. That's quick.
Man, you okay?
Quick.
Yeah. That was like 2 minutes ago.
I was literally talking, though. That's all right. I was like in the middle of a sentence and I got thrown off.
I don't make smoothies. I can't contribute much to this conversation. Excuse me if I try to throw in a stupid ass joke every once in a while.
That's Joe.
All right, please. You were saying that the last smoothie, when it's diluted because you've iced it, then took a portion, stored it, iced it. Yeah, of course. So that water is going to dilute
just
the original.
Or just the flavor of it, because each day you're adding like the essential elements, but maybe you're not adding the like super sweet banana and the apple and all that stuff to it. And so the flavor of it's just not as good anymore. And so you're ready to be done with it.
Okay.
So you finish the jar off. Then the next morning you start all over. You make a brand new fresh batch.
Is this meal planning? In other words, do you do it and hope that that first one lasts 3 days so that you're not duplicating it day after day after day after day?
Yeah,
that's where people get bothered with smoothies. It's like, I enjoy the taste. I know that they're nutritious, but every day.
Well, and keeping up with all the different ingredients that you need in order to have a really good smoothie, and also cleaning the dish, cleaning
the
stuff.
Is your starter always the same?
No.
Okay, go ahead. I'm all ears.
It's basically what we have. But it has key ingredients, staples, if you will. Fresh greens. Okay. So this morning's, I actually had fresh green.
Let me interrupt you. Where were you in the process this morning, today, starting over, 2 days in, what with your starter, what?
I started from scratch today.
Okay.
Because yesterday, Lily was here, and we basically drank the whole pitcher.
Gotcha.
There wasn't extra left
over. Gotcha. So you started today with fresh greens.
Yes. Yeah, so every day, I'm going to use whatever fresh greens I have available. Now, I'm not going to use like broccoli greens or maybe even cabbage greens, although I have used those before. But I'm going to use the sweeter greens like beet greens, kale, spinach, stuff like that.
Okay.
You might even with other types of greens, like if you like different types of herb greens like mint, lemon balm, you can throw that stuff in there too. So whatever fresh green stuff you have, throw it in there. I use a beet green today. I like the beet green without the beet in my smoothie because it does give a little bit of the beet flavor and the beet health, because beets are really, really good for you. But it doesn't have that like dirt flavor taste.
Right.
And it also turns your funky green brown smoothie that you're about to make into a pretty red smoothie.
Okay.
So that it's edible looking, like, you know, consumers want to buy not brown french fries. They want to buy
golden
crispy golden french fries.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Same kind of thing, except I use beets for it. Then I always have yogurt. With the good acidophilus and all the good live stuff in it, yogurt. Elderberry syrup, which locally I've been buying local from a local friend.
I don't know. I mean, I know that elderberry syrup is a stock pantry item for folks that try to eat as naturally as possible because it has a lot of really nutritional value.
Elderberry is very good for your immune system.
There you go.
It's an immune, it's almost like a flu bomb, basically,
when you
drink elderberry syrup.
You found someone that makes elderberry
syrup.
I actually
trade. A gal here in town, she gets veggies from me. And I get elderberry syrup that she makes.
Interesting.
It's a very good deal. Good. Yes. So that goes into my smoothie every day. Coconut water almost all the time is my liquid, because you got to have a good liquid to make it nice and smooth.
Right.
Right. By cans of coconut water. And then I have made a while back, and I'll give you some other, when we get to the end of this, because this is today's recipe, but when we get to the end of this, I'll tell you what are some alternatives to these things that I did today. But I had made a while back for a snack, for a potluck snack type of situation, some protein balls that have been in the freezer all this time.
Yeah.
So I throw a couple of those in every day too. Because in any of my smoothies, I'm going to want protein in it, and I'm going to want some kind of nut butter in it, likely anyways. Uh-huh. And so that's been my solution at this point. Just throw a couple of those in there.
Drop the balls in there. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it's good to put a lot of frozen things in there that you can, because you're already trying to keep it cold, so you don't have to put so much ice in there.
Okay.
So to have the frozen protein balls, that's good. Frozen fruit. So you buy me organic frozen fruit from the grocery store.
Yeah, in the frozen section.
Sometimes during the season when we've got a lot of excess fruit, we'll put some of our own in the freezer. So like watermelon and cantaloupe and whatever else I've got. We've got a lot of strawberries coming from the farmer's market.
I can buy at the grocery store bagged frozen organic blueberries, mango, strawberries, berry mix. And they even have like smoothie mixes that you can buy that include some of the greens and other things that you're getting out of your garden.
The priority in frozen fruit for me is the berries, because berries are extremely high in all of the nutritional value we want. Also,
antioxidants too.
Yeah, if you go back to that concept of the smoothie being a pretty color, blueberries and strawberries add kind of a red tint to it. Mm-hmm. And so those are the things I prefer. Now, I want to just make sure I tell people that frozen food is healthier for you than the canned food is. So if you're going fresh, is going to be your most nutritious.
Sure.
If you have to choose something that's already processed, your next best option is frozen.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to do berries, you have got to do organic, because they are some of the most absorbent fruit that's out there, and any chemical that's in the land anywhere is going to be in that. So if the goal of the smoothie is to be a healthy snack, a healthy dinner, a healthy whatever, then you've got to choose the organic options in these things, in my opinion. That's my opinion. I also use a fresh fruit of some kind, usually an apple or banana. Actually, I prefer the soggy bananas the most.
Sure.
But those just add some good sweetness to it.
Right. Then the soggier, the sweeter.
Yeah. And this is this morning's. And the frozen fruit that I used this morning was a peach, actually, because that's what we had. And then I also do use some of the canned fruits that we often have from the farm. And this morning I used figs. We have some canned figs right now. So I was throwing those in. Other options that are available, that was this morning's recipe, but other options that are available to fill in some of these gaps is kefir and OJ. Those are a good liquid that'll help you make it smooth.
Instead of your coconut water.
Exactly.
Or in addition to.
Right. Exactly. Could be in addition to if you've got it. And I like honey for sweetener, because you don't want it to be...
Oh, it's time to buy honey. I didn't buy honey the other day. Sorry, babe.
Oh, that's okay. And nut butter as well. Because I like to have, so that's kind of that option. If you don't do protein balls, nut butter is a good, just a spoonful of peanut butter or almond butter or whatever type of butter or tahini.
Which do you prefer, almond or peanut?
I don't care. Okay. It doesn't really matter to me. And I was going to say, I didn't say this morning that I also did a fresh avocado, because we had a cut avocado in the refrigerator.
Right.
And it's better to go ahead and use it. Yeah. And so I just threw that in, and that helps to make it smoothie. And it's also got a lot of protein in it.
Sure.
If I've got moringa, I mean, any green stuff I have coming out of the backyard, spinach, I mean, just anything is just going to get thrown right in there with
it. I liked at the end you threw in some sweeteners. Now, they're natural sweeteners, honey, nut butter.
Yes.
Processed.
Oh, absolutely. Especially when you're trying to feed them to kids.
Yeah, because at the top of it, it's like, I always put my greens. And I could just hear kids in cars with their moms listening right now going, no, mom, but listen, kids.
Right.
Honey. Peanut butter, bananas. Mm-hmm. When your mom makes this smoothie for you.
Blueberries, strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
All the good stuff.
And you do this every day.
I have been doing it every day. Well, I didn't do it every day during the freeze apocalypse or whatever.
Sure.
But because we didn't have any power and everything, you know what it is. But yeah, I like it. I like it. And then it gives me the ability to then go and head and take all those supplements that might potentially make your stomach all queasy and weird.
And the only question I've got is, where's my smoothie?
Oh, you're already gone usually by the time I make it.
Sometimes I see you enjoying a smoothie and there's no smoothie for Joe.
Well, I'll give you a smoothie.
Maybe I don't make caldo for you next time.
I'll give you a smoothie. So then now everyone knows it's time for Table Topics!
What grade would you give yourself for environmental responsibility?
Oh, I guess I'd give myself
A, B, C, D, F.
I'd give myself an A plus.
For environmental responsibility.
Absolutely.
I saw you using a plastic water bottle.
I don't give a shit. I'm environmentally A plus. I've been.
You drive a gas car.
I've been social justice warrior before social justice warriors were cool.
I don't give myself an A plus because some of the things that we know hurt the environment we participate in.
Well.
Oh boy.
This is going to be a long one. You should have picked a different one.
I'll go pick another one right now.
Just because you use plastic bottles and gas doesn't mean that you're not an A-plus environmental steward.
I'm giving myself a B for the aforementioned reasons that you and I don't maybe agree on.
Like you use like Clorox and I wouldn't use Clorox.
Sometimes I'll go buy Clorox because there's a household chore that requires Clorox, like your air conditioning vents outside have been clogged up with algae and pour little Clorox down.
So what would be the examples that you would say are not? I mean, yes, we drive...
I would say, yeah, there's options to be more environmentally aware that we don't do for convenience or cost, but I feel very comfortable knowing that at all times I am trying to make the best decision as possible. And I think that if that is your point of view and you really do mean it, then you get a B just right off of the thing.
And also you don't do what I do with nature.
Totally understand. There's not a more magical place than in the backyard and some of the places that I know that aren't even in our heads yet that we're going to create out of the farm. But in our backyard currently, where you are surrounded by green life and birds and butterflies and all the and chickens and all the fun stuff. But the green life, you sit in the middle of those garden spots or we've created seating areas where you're surrounded by your gardens. And I just know I'm breathing some of the cleanest air in town.
Yeah. And if I can get anyone... especially living in a Bay Area, to stop using weed killer on their lawns for clover, then I've cured a lot of more of the environment than most people have.
Yeah, we are we're a quarter mile from the Corpus Christi Bay. And our city forefathers had the bright idea that all of the gutters in front of our homes would go down into where Pennywise the Clown lives, whatever you call those things, and go straight... Into our bay. If we haven't had rain in a real long time and we get a half an inch of rain and there's a gush of water through that system, it is so sad and so
heartbreaking. That's when you get to see the environmental unawareness.
To watch 20,000 styrofoam cups that were thrown out of someone's car, blew out of someone's trash and made its way down the little gutter in front of our homes and into that hole where Pennywise lives. And they just collect there and they sit there. And then when you get that rush of water with a rain event, they just go right into the bay. But that's not all. It's every single synthetic fertilizer you're talking about.
Yeah.
Some asshole in the middle of the night that said, I got to get rid of my oil change tank. No one's looking. Let me just dump it over to him. It goes right into our water. And when you live on the coast, no, that's not even true. It is true, but there are other people that don't live on the coasts around the country that live in naturally amazing spots. It's not coastal, but it's mountain. It's not coastal, but it's ranges. When you live on the coast, though, and you can see that kind of cause and effect, it changes your mind because we need this coast to be as clean as possible, to keep tourists here, to keep residents here, surfers.
And then we're getting kind of poo-pooed on literally because there's E. coli in our bay water, but we're on the Gulf and in the Gulf Stream where the Mississippi River comes out and we get the stream of everything the entire country lets go down into the water.
The Gulf of Mexico from Florida to Texas underneath Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia is a funnel effect right into us.
And every single chemical that gets put on the land goes right into that and comes right out there. And we are literally killing things in our Gulf of Mexico with that kind of stuff. So... my A plus goes to that every single house that I can train to minimally stop using weed killer on their clover, which is going to die as soon as our temperatures get to 81, which will be next week. There's no need for that to occur. In fact, it's actually fertilizing your lawn while it's there.
Yeah.
So stop it.
We have lived here for 7 years. You talked at the very beginning about how beautiful our thick, lush St. Augustine grass is.
Mm-hmm.
When it's raining and the temperatures are right and everyone's yards up and down the streets are green, ours is the greenest. Mm-hmm. Never put a drop of fertilizer on it. Hey, you want some black market rabbit? Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Dinner Table Talks. We will be back next Monday with a fresh episode. In the meantime,
hit us up on social media, send us an email, DM us, whatever. We want to hear from you.
And we hope that you're enjoying the episodes as much as we enjoy creating them for you.